You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk to a children's author who visited Wisconsin schools for the Read on Wisconsin program.
First, the Zika virus is still in the news with concerns over the outbreak in Brazil as the Summer Olympics gets closer. And there have been two cases showing up here in Wisconsin affecting travelers who had recently visited Central America.
But Zika isn't the only disease that has health officials worried. There's been a recent rise in yellow fever in parts of Africa, and the world is still watching for a possible return of Ebola.
Our next guest is a UW researcher with a unique perspective on all three diseases. He regularly works in Uganda, which is home to the Zika virus, is on the front lines in the yellow fever outbreak, and helped lead the anti-Ebola effort.
Tony Goldberg joins us now. He's a professor of epidemiology at UW-Madison and associate director for research at the UW-Madison Global Health Institute. Tony, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Rob.
Well, as we mentioned, you've done a lot of work in Uganda. You were just there a few months ago, I think. And I understand that's where Zika was first discovered quite a long time ago. Can you talk a little bit about that background of Zika in Uganda?
Sure. Zika is named for Zika Forest. I was just there a few months ago, which is a small forest near the capital of Uganda. And the virus was discovered there in 1947 by a researcher named Alexander Haddo, who was an early virus hunter in a way. He was looking for new viral threats, and he found this virus largely as a result of looking for and investigating yellow fever virus. But he documented it, published on it. It's been known for a while. He didn't think very much of it. And lo and behold, in 2016, here it is.
Yeah, we've talked to you some about trying to get early warning systems in place for diseases that could affect humans, often coming from animal populations. But what is it about a disease that, as you say, was first recorded 70 years or so ago, and all of a sudden having this big outbreak in a different hemisphere?
Yeah, it's frustrating to say the least. There are many diseases we've known about for a long time that we can't predict where and when they're going to break out. For example, Ebola, last year's major viral story. Mm-hmm. We've known about that virus for decades as well, and yet it was very difficult to predict where and when it would break out, and no one would have guessed West Africa. So I think the lesson is that it's, of course, very important to do surveillance and to hunt for new viruses and other new pathogens, but it's not enough. There has to be something else that's going to help us do a better job of predicting what's going to emerge.
And Zika there in Uganda for so long, we've seen how it's affected Brazil and other places in South and Central America, worries in the United States. Is this a threat? Is this a problem in Uganda?
Interestingly, we're not sure, because Zika is there. It's in a lot of sub-Saharan Africa, but it's eclipsed by other causes of fever that are, frankly, more well-known and more day-to-day problems, things like malaria or chikungunya virus or dengue or some of these other diseases that we've also known about for a while. So Zika is there, but we really don't have a good handle on what clinical symptoms it's been causing over the decades. It's so dramatic in South America and Central America because that appears to be an immunologically naive population of people. So it's like the first wave of a new virus coming in and sweeping through a population, which is often very dramatic.
So that means they haven't had decades, centuries maybe, to develop a resistance to this particular virus.
That's right. There maybe hasn't been resistance. It's possible that the virus is taking advantage of an open niche in the mosquito population that's not available in the mosquitoes in Africa. It's another example of how globalization, global travel, and movement of people and insects can create these explosive situations when it comes to disease.
Talking to UW-Madison epidemiologist Tony Goldberg about Zika and other diseases in the news. Are you worried that all the attention to Zika is crowding out attention we should be paying to other worrisome diseases? You mentioned yellow fever and Ebola, for example.
I think there's general concern among scientists that may be the case. We of course, are worried about Zika. It's a major public health emergency. We should still be worried about Ebola. Just yesterday, the WHO declared Guinea to be transmission-free for Ebola, so that's good news, but we can't stand our guard down just yet. Yellow fever is resurging in Central Africa, in Uganda and Angola, and maybe the Democratic Republic of Congo. And we hear these stories emerging now of novel diseases, like there's the South Sudan fever virus, or South Sudan fever that may be caused by a virus. It's like Ebola, but it's definitely not Ebola. We don't know yet what's causing it. So there is a concern that we're playing whack-a-mole, if you will, that these diseases keep emerging and we throw vast amounts of resources towards these individual diseases to develop the vaccines, to develop the therapies, and to institute controls for those diseases. But unless we step back a little bit at the same time and address the underlying root drivers for why these diseases are emerging at such a fast rate, we'll probably still be playing whack-a-mole next year.
Now we, and I'll include the media and the public and probably a lot of policymakers in this, get excited, get anxious when a disease is in the headlines. And I think that's when you see public funding in that whack-a-mole game that you mentioned. So that's one state. And the other state is there's not a disease currently in the headlines, so we're not worried about it. What would be a more stable approach, a more preventive approach that's going to get us out ahead of the next outbreak, whatever it might be?
That's a good question. And I think we started to really learn this lesson during the Ebola outbreak. It became apparent that the reason Ebola got out of hand was not only because of lack of vaccines and therapies, but it was because of a lack of attention that we've paid in the past to healthcare infrastructure, public health reporting, support systems on the ground, cultural and social practices. So I think in addition to the wonderful biomedical research that we do, and we, I mean scientists like those at UW-Madison, there needs to be a complementary approach from policymakers and social scientists who understand how people are moving and behaving on the ground, because that really, it's the behavior and choices that people make on an individual level that are determining which pathogens are transmitted, either between people or maybe from wild animals to people initially.
I've seen some reporting lately that Uganda, again, where you've done a lot of work, has done a pretty good job against diseases like Ebola. They have some good systems in place. And that made me think, you know, sometimes when we in the West look at these diseases, it's how can we in the West go and help them in Africa or South America deal with a disease? Is that only maybe part of the answer? It's that local infrastructure, the local doctors and scientists and local people need to be part of the solution?
I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah. Uganda, I think, is a model for how developing countries in Africa can invest wisely in public health infrastructure that allows them to respond efficiently to these sorts of outbreaks. We saw this explosive outbreak in West Africa in large part because we did not have the infrastructure on the ground to stop it. There have been Ebola outbreaks in Uganda as recently as 2008. And they were very small and contained. And part of the reason that was the case is that there was a public health infrastructure there, maybe not the most sophisticated one in the world, but enough to report the results quickly and enough to get people from Uganda, doctors and international teams on the ground to basically contain it. And Uganda was one of the countries that contributed, one of the African countries that contributed to the West African outbreak by sending personnel and by providing sort of a model of how one would proceed in these cases. So I've actually, in my years working in Uganda, I think I've learned a lot more about public health responses from my colleagues in Uganda than they've learned from me.
And I know part of what you do is watch for what the next disease might be. And you and a team have a paper just about to be published, I think it is, on a strain of hepatitis. Is that right?
Yeah, so part of what we do in my lab is virus hunting in a way, and we were always interested in discovering new viruses in animals before they make it into people. You know, different people focus on different steps in the process. Some people focus on putting out the fire. We're hoping that we can prevent the fire from starting in the first place. So we did some routine screening of some baboons in Uganda and found a new virus that's related to human hepatitis A virus. We have no idea whether it's a health threat to people or baboons, but it's yet another one of the many examples in the literature of the fact that we really have a very small understanding of all the pathogens or potential pathogens out in nature that can affect humans.
Tony, thanks as always for joining us.
You're very welcome.
That's UW-Madison epidemiologist Tony Goldberg looking at the efforts against Zika, Ebola, and other diseases around the world.